Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
You know how everything seems like a good idea after you've had a few? Yeah, that's this show.
Riding in my car. And I'm listening to the radio.
It's time for Dukes and Bell.
Oh, someone told me it's the Black Beverly Hills. Is that true?
Driving in Atlanta just got a whole lot more bearable.
Welcome to the party, pal.
Hi, everybody. Carl Dukes and Mike Bell. The names that mean goodness.
Say my name, you know who I am.
Carl Dukes.
I drink and I know things.
Oh, don't question my authority, things.
King Kong ain't got on me.
Sometimes you just got to call somebody, and I'm not ashamed to say it. You know,
And Mike Bell.
I'm funny how? I mean, funny like I'm a clown, I amuse you.
Hope you guess my name.
Bring a pitcher of beer every 7 minutes till somebody passes out, and then bring one every 10 minutes, right?
Get ready for the best 5 hours of your life.
Fat, drunk, and stupid is no way to go through life, sir.
Don't believe me, just watch.
This is Dukes and Bell.
You know what? Why don't we start doing the stuff that other guys have done, other radio shows around the country?
No.
On Sports Radio 92.9, The Game.
Atlanta, what's going on? It is Dukes and Bell on Sports Radio 92.9, The Game. We start off every day and every hour by saying, hey, man, it is good to have you listening. Brian, a.k.a. Sam Tarley, and you can relate to that if you watch Game of Thrones. Behind the glass, our engineer today, Bo Morgan, executive producing the show. It is a Monday, guys, and we are 3 days away from the NFL draft. One of the most exciting days on so many levels, Mike, because we get a chance to see how our team potentially gets rebuilt. We get hopefully an instant starter, a guy that comes in and immediately has impact on our football team. And then just the NFL itself to see where guys go and what teams screw up and where guys, you know, some teams will reach for, where guys end up. It's going to be an exciting day, man. And a reminder, Mike and I will be down there, Mercedes-Benz Stadium on Thursday, getting you ready for the draft as it is our pre-draft show, leading you into our draft show, which Wes and Arch and our man Randy McMichael, who just left, and Mike Conti will all be a part of starting at 7. But, man, it's going to be an exciting time down there.
Yeah, man, and this is the week where the misinformation, the innuendo, the rumors really start to heat up. And already today I saw something where the Jets were saying they're interested in Ed Oliver. They're not interested in Ed Oliver. That's just trying to get somebody who might be interested in Ed Oliver in the top 15 to maybe do something really dumb to a trade up and help them fortify their draft. I mean, everybody knows that there's guys that are better than Ed. I mean, not that Ed isn't a top 15 guy, Carl, but not top three. But that's just some of the stuff that's out there. And we'll talk more about it in the Falcon Report and the NFL Blitz. But our own D. Orlando Ledbetter from the AJC saying that, you know, if you hadn't looked at the Falcons roster in a minute, we're a little thin at the safety position. So you can add that to a to-do list, Carl, for draft week.
Now, coming up a little bit later on, I've got some information I want to share with you guys. It might surprise you. About who the Falcons are now targeting.
Is this going to make me upset?
It might, but it also might make you very happy. And when I got word of this today, because now I'm doing my due diligence and calling around and talking to different people. And listen, Mike's right. There's a lot of misinformation out there. But if you talk to one or more folks when it comes to our football team, and I've done that, they are all agreeing on one thing. And I'm going to tell you what it is coming up here a little bit later on in the show. Stay tuned for that. Mike, though, we got to start because we're going to talk to Daniel Jeremiah from NFL Network, and we'll get his thoughts about this draft, and we'll get his thoughts about what he thinks the Falcons are going to do on Thursday. That's coming your way in less than 20 minutes. But we got to start today, man, talking about two things. One, Atlanta Braves on the road, and we'll get to that. But two, what's going on with our Atlanta United?
Man, oh, man, we were so excited to get back in Mercedes-Benz because it had been a month and, like, what, 2 days before we had seen our team in action. And you know, I got to be honest, let me just start real quick. I knew that they were going to do these plastic recyclable jerseys that they wore last year, which you have to basically, if you're my size, you got to order like a quadruple X for it to fit. And as I was walking into the Benz, I saw a couple guys wearing these light blue jerseys. I'm like, oh, yeah, that's right. That's this weekend. I hate those jerseys. They look nothing like us. I get it. You know, teams will wear Barcelona. Pick your two favorite teams. Even in the NBA now, they're wearing colors that look nothing like their core logos. But, man, first of all, like I'm watching NYCFC out there. That just threw me off for the jump.
It didn't have, for me, it didn't have any connection.
just because of the color scheme. And maybe I'm weird like that. I don't know. Obviously, I'm not, because you and I both felt the same way.
Right.
And we didn't even talk about the uniforms. We'll get to the performance in just a second. But, you know, outside of that and going, do I like that or do I not like that? The thing I didn't like is the vibe I felt. And for the first time in Mercedes-Benz during an Atlanta United game, and maybe again, am I the only one that's feeling this? But for the first time, Mike Bell, I don't know if the vibe was what it should have been.
Yeah, I know that, and I talked about this earlier this year, because the home opener, I mean, the crowd was dead by the end of the second half in that one, because unfortunately against Cincinnati, we had these dreams of a 6-1 blowout. We were going to smoke an expansion team, and then reality checked in. The Philadelphia game kind of took some of the oomph out of the crowd as well, because we expected to do more. But in this one, when you score and a team gives up that early goal as we did, and look, this has nothing to do with Frank DeBoer. We were giving up sloppy goals like this under Tata Martino. We'd have defensive lapses. LGP is high risk, high reward, and he certainly was on that play. But, Carl, I'm with you. I don't know if it's a bunch of new fans. And, again, we want to welcome as many fans in, but I don't know if it's folks that know this is the buzz and they want to check it out. And the support section was doing their part. Chance really didn't kind of get the oomph that they needed. But I think that that first goal just took a lot out of people.
I do, too. As far as the match itself, Barco hits the post twice. Guys, you know, I'm going to use the words in soccer lingo, and then I'm going to explain it to you in layman's terms. We were threatening all night. We were as dangerous as we've been all season long, all right?
Mm-hmm.
Meaning we had a ton of shots on goal. We didn't obviously connect on enough of those. But for me, Mike, the correlation for Falcon fans is very simple. This is a game and a match on Saturday where you saw Julio Jones go for 150 yards, but yet we didn't score in the red zone. Okay? That's the equivalent of what we're watching right now. And it's frustrating. And for United fans, here's the deal, guys. If we're not scoring, and we're not, our scoring issues continue. This has been a problem since the start of the season. Mike, this has continued. We can't ignore it and act as if, well, everything else was so good that, you know what, the scoring eventually will get there. We keep hearing that, and it still hasn't.
Yeah, we've just blown through every benchmark of when we were going to get better, and they were, okay, now we got, you know, well, wait till we get to Revolution. And we did win that game, and we had talked about all these, you know, parts of the season. Well, okay, now we get these guys into a rhythm. The problem, I think, which some people are missing on Saturday, no Bello, no Escobar. I mean, and if anything, we miss Garza, but Garza, that was too good an offer for Darren to refuse when we made the trade to Cincinnati. But you miss Garza. As banged up as he was, it just seems like the back line is a problem. We can't keep these guys healthy. Nobody, I don't care who you are, wants to see Breck Shea out there. I'm sorry. You know, and I had a couple of soccer heads. I had a mixed bag, Carl. I had some that were pro-Breck and anti-Breck.
Up, down, up, down.
I'm just like,
up,
I don't
down.
Know what this guy does.
Yeah.
I don't know what this guy does. And I'm supposed to think that he's really good at it. But we miss Escobar. Escobar stirred the drink in the second half of the season last year when he came on. Bello certainly makes the back line different. I'm not comfortable where Parkhurst was on the field. But unfortunately, these are some of the realities that Frank had to deal with the roster.
I just don't think we're playing to Parkey's strengths. Not at his age. Not right now. I don't want to blame, you know, Parkey, because he's doing what he's asked to do. But for me, I don't think we're playing to his strengths. And so that's why, you know, guys are asking, isn't he kind of out of position? It's nothing he can't handle. But I would tell you 5 or 6 years ago, he might have been better at handling it. Okay. Just based on the athleticism and what he needs to do there. Either way, here's where we're at. We're still not getting results. We're still not getting results. And so for all the things that looked really good, and there were a lot of things that we're going to talk about with Jason Longshore coming up, inevitably it is about results. FC Dallas got great goaltending. There's no doubt about it. But when you are having as many opportunities and owning the ball, guys, 72% possessions, Mike, we're just not getting it done.
Yeah, so I know that we can take, I guess some folks can. I can't, because to me it's a zero-sum game. Either you win or you lose. I'm not going to feel good about percentage of chances and how many we converted. You got to put the ball in the net. We've got guys that know how to do it. And I got to be honest, yes, I did leave my seat by the time the second goal was scored. I was very angry. I watched the Joseph Martinez penalty kick on the big screen as I was going down the escalator. So I was still in the building. You know, and now we got some. You got some United fans. There's two camps. You can't criticize. What is it? Will you guys become Braves fans now? I mean, we demand better. We're the defending champions. So there's a lot of stuff out there. Frank DeBoer can't finish the shots for the guys. You know, and I think we'll still debate, and is it the right culture fit with Frank? I think there's some signs that are pointing in the right direction. But, Carl, you touched on it. You got to close, man. Remember the movie Glengarry Glen Ross? Always be closing.
Always.
You got to put the ball in the net when you get that chance, especially when you got the goalie one-on-one dead meat.
Daniel Jeremiah from NFL Network will stop by here in less than 10 minutes to talk some NFL draft with us here on Dukes and Bell. We invite you to follow us, guys, across all social media platforms. The radio station's 929 The Game. Of course, like the station on Facebook if you've not done so. Follow us on Instagram as well. He is Mike Bell, ATL. I'm at Put 'em Up. See Dukes. This radio show, Dukes and Bell 929. More about Atlanta United coming up with Jason Longshore next hour, 3:20. To the Braves, who, you know, got rained out, we knew that Friday, so they played that traditional doubleheader on Saturday.
You know, just when you and I are pimping Tukey and saying, hey, man, Tukey showed you against the Mets 2 weeks ago. He can handle this. Tukey was a hot mess in that first game.
Well, he got blown up. They end up winning the late game. Saturday, it was Julio Teheran on the hill for 4.5 innings, 4 2/3, basically. And they lose that game 8-4. Corey Kluber just outpitched him. I mean, basically, he did a better job than Julio. But in the second game, that's the one you're alluding to, Mike, Tukey took it. I mean, Tukey took it in the face. He couldn't get the ball across the plate. 7 earned runs, and you're going, uh-oh. So I'm going to be honest with you guys. It's 7-0. I flip it on. I tell my wife, I'm like, all right, what else is on?
Right.
And they win. They come back and win 8-7. 5 relievers came in. So for all the conversation, this was one of those games that I was frowning on, and they came in and handled their business. Acuna, it was great. Ozzie, 2-run single. Bases loaded walk. I mean, all the things that went your way. Oh, and Dansby hit a 2-run homer. So the Braves come back and win 8-7. And then last night on Sunday Night Baseball, there's that guy Max Fried dealing again and showing us that he is the real deal.
And again, if Snicker had left him in and not – again, the situation last time he was out there, he was going to lead off the bottom of the sixth, so they took him out. This guy could be 4-0. The dude could be 4-0 right now. I mean, he really has been that good for the Bravos. Certainly, Carl, I mean, you and I went round and round over the years. I'm like, look, it's go time. He's of the age. He's got the experience. He's been in the bigs, you know, back and forth from the minors. So now it's his time, and you're seeing it. Great poise. I mean, mixing up his pitches. Everything like a cagey veteran you'd expect to see from a guy who's been in the league for 10 years. Great stuff.
Well, he got great help, too. Josh Donaldson, bringer of rain. Hit 2 dingers last night. Did I say dingers? 2 long balls.
Dongs?
Yes. Yard. He went yard twice, Mike.
4 baggers?
Freddie added 3 hits. But here's the thing about Max Fried. He went into this matchup last night with a 0.92 ERA. He leaves after last night with a 1.38 ERA. His stuff is amazing. And here's the crazy thing. Paul Byrd came on this show like 2 weeks ago and said, guys, from spring training, from the time I saw him, he said the best stuff of anybody. Paul Byrd wasn't lying. I mean, I was a guy that liked Max Fried. I didn't think that they were giving him the opportunities. I thought there was a yo-yo thing going on last year. Either way, they've given him the ball and said, it's your time, and he is taking advantage of it.
Max is fun to watch. Everybody's raking. Dansby cooled off a little bit after that red-hot start. He's at 254. But everybody, now it's good to see, as you mentioned, Donaldson with the home run getting cooking. 1-for-5 last night on Sunday night was Ender Inciarte, but Ender's still sub-200. Does that concern you? He says he's fine.
He says he's fine.
But it's kind of what happened last year with kind of a brutal start for Ender. But everybody else, 1 through 7, if you will, take Ender out, has been raking for this team.
Yeah, Markakis is just the professional hitter. 2 hits last night. But it's a good series, man. You go, you get rained out, you know, you lose that first one, and then the way the second one started, you thought, okay, this might be a sweep for the Indians, and the Braves respond. So they showed some resiliency over the weekend. It is Dukes and Bell, man. We are going to talk a lot about the NFL draft all week. Now, we've been on this, guys, you know, for the last month and a half. There's a lot of speculation out there, a lot of stuff being said. We're going to talk to one guy we trust, Daniel Jeremiah, who does a lot of stuff for NFL Network. He also does the Move the Sticks podcast, and he is a part of their coverage as well. NFL Network providing live coverage of the 2019 NFL Draft. I think, and we'll get his thoughts on this, that the whole Kyler Murray thing is still undecided. That as much as we all believe now that this is probably going to happen, there's a really good chance it might not. And if it doesn't, guys, it shakes up the entire draft. Completely, because now you have a situation where the Raiders may move up because apparently John Gruden's in love with the kid, and then you still have the Giants who need a quarterback. The Dolphins are still in the mix. If Kyler Murray doesn't go 1 overall, Mike, it completely shakes up the draft.
Yeah, a guy who's really becoming a wild card in this draft is Dave Gettleman. We used to call him Dave Gettleman from Carolina, who's now calling the shots for the Giants. There's all sorts of rumors about them feeling they can trade down and still get Dwayne Haskins. and maybe pick them. They got two picks in the first round. There's also talk, as we said to start the show, the Jets are maybe shopping that third pick. That's why they're trying to pump some life into Ed Oliver going higher. And we'll talk to Daniel Jeremiah next. He's got us taking Greedy Williams. There's still everyone from Jonah Williams to Christian Wilkins to Ed Oliver. Nobody, there is no consensus. Nobody's in agreement about what the Falcons, Carl, are going to do at 14.
No, and that's why you need to tune in. 5 o'clock Falcon Report. We got some news we want to share with you guys. And again, we'll be at Mercedes-Benz. And Mike said it last week. Go to Falcons.com and get the information if you're not a season ticket holder, if you want to hang out and go down there. All right, man. Daniel Jeremiah is on the show next. What does he think about who's going number one? And by the way, what do you think the Falcons are going to do? Find out next on Dukes and Bell.
A, B, C. A, always, B, B, C, closing. Always be closing. Always be closing.
United.
This is Jim Rome with the CBS Sports Minute. Last night, the Warriors rolled into state.
It is Dukes and Bell. Happy Monday. Hope you had a great Easter weekend. I'm excited, man, for the NFL draft, like many of you. It's one of the most exciting days in sports when you talk about the anticipation. I'm not only seeing a lot of guys that you watched in college, but where they ultimately end up, and maybe they end up on your team, you know, and that's the cool thing about it. Right now, joining us is a guy who does nothing better than the NFL draft, nothing better with Daniel Jeremiah and his podcast, Move the Sticks, but he covers the draft, guys, and breaks down film, and Mike and I enjoy visiting with him. Daniel, we wanted to get you on, obviously, this week before the draft actually takes place, and I guess the first thing for us as we start talking about this is, what's your take on the whole Kyler Murray thing? I'm hearing now that is not a done deal. Do you feel that way, or is that a smokescreen?
You know what? Anything you get this time of year, you always are a little bit skeptical about it. I haven't heard anything that would convince me otherwise. So I'm still under the assumption that it's going to be Kyler Murray with the first pick. And nobody knows for sure, but if I was guessing, I would say that's what it looked like to me. Selfishly, if somebody's going to be sitting there covering this thing, I hope we don't know until we get on TV and find out with everybody else. But I still feel like it ends up being Kyler Murray, but there's, I put it about 80-85% with that confidence.
The big thing for us, Daniel, is all the quarterbacks get taken before we select at 14, which gives us a lot of options. Drew Luck's stock is going up. Haskins' stock seems to be going the other way. You got the kid from Duke. I mean, will we see all the quarterbacks taken by 14?
I have, it's normally by this time you're like, okay, the quarterbacks have gotten really hot and we know they're getting ready to go. I don't necessarily hear all that. I hear, Washington is likely to take one. Miami's not likely to take one. Cincinnati, the latest you hear, is not likely to take one. So, I think there's a chance. I do feel either Drew Lock or Daniel Jones, perhaps both, could end up sliding a little bit and maybe even get down into the 20s. So, we'll see. Teams can be coy this time of year, but everything I've been hearing lately sounds like, Rosen could take up one of those spots. And then we'll see from there. But the latest I heard was Miami probably not taking one, Cincinnati probably not taking one. Denver is a little bit of a wild card. I know they've done so much work on quarterbacks, but can you draft one? They haven't even seen Joe Flacco take a snap yet.
Right?
Don't they want to see if he's got anything left before they spend a pick this high? That's my theory.
It's a good theory. Daniel Jeremiah, NFL Network analyst. You can follow him on Twitter at MoveTheSticks. And NFL Network provides live coverage of the 2019 NFL Draft from Nashville beginning Thursday at 8 p.m. I'm starting to believe we may have only one corner taken in the first round. Am I crazy to think that?
No, I don't know what's going to happen with the corners. I know there's teams that need them down there. But, for instance, there's a corner that I have as my ninth corner. And I talked to a team in the league, and they have them as their top corner.
Huh.
So the grades are all over the map on these guys. What everybody agrees on is there's no top 10, top 15, type talent. They're all in the 20s, 30s, and even into the 40s. I think you can find some good players there. So that might cause some teams to kind of kick that can down the road a little bit and say, we'll wait until round two or even round three and feel like we won't get that different of a player.
I know that as Daniel Jeremiah breaks it down, guys, go to NFL.com and you can get all the different mock drafts from all their panel of experts. Daniel, for the time being, has got us going with Greedy Williams out of LSU. A lot of Falcon fans that are dog fans saw DeAndre Baker be a shutdown guy. Teams wouldn't even throw his way. And then his combine just seemed to screw everything up with the scouts.
Yeah, he did. He had a poor spring. I thought he was going into the process at the beginning. I thought he was the best corner on tape. But, look, the tape's the most important thing. But when you interview poorly, and you don't run quite as well as you should, as fast as he is. He should have ran better than that. This wasn't a great spring for him. You know, it's a complete process from the fall to the spring. And I think he took a little bit of a hit there in the spring. So, you know, we'll see. I think he's got a chance to go in the bottom of one. Most teams I talk to around the league have him in the second round at this point in time, which could end up being a steal because, again, he played really well last year.
Daniel, I've been high on Ed Oliver from the jump. Then he kills it at his pro day, and I think his stock obviously went up. How high is Ed Oliver now in this draft? Is he a top five pick?
I think it's likely. I would say three or four is probably the two most likely landing spots. Three is, as I mentioned a week or two ago, you know, with the Greg Williams connection, having somebody he feels like can do some Aaron Donald-type things, who he coached. Now, he's not Aaron Donald, but he can be disruptive in that front. And then you've got the Raiders at four. Those are the two teams you hear the most about. The only part about the Raiders that I'm a little bit skeptical is, you know, they got Mo Hurst, who's an undersized, he's a good player, was an undersized guy who fell in the draft last year due to some health. But, man, you get into the game and you've got Mo Hurst and then you've got Ed Oliver, you are light, really light up the middle in a division where, you know the Chargers can run the ball, you know the Chiefs can kind of do whatever they want, and the Broncos with Munchak up there, you know they're going to make a commitment to run the ball. So that would be the only thing that would cause a little bit of skepticism with that pick.
Daniel Jeremiah with us, guys, on the WadeFord.com hotline from NFL Network, the Move the Sticks podcast. Always great stuff for draft time. Because we were talking to start the show with the rumors that the Jets might be interested in Ed Oliver, and I said, that's got to be typical Jets smokescreen. So does that mean that Quinnen Williams is going to slip a little bit?
He's too good. I mean, this is what happens. You hear all this stuff, and then you bite on some of it, and then you get down to it, and all of a sudden the draft starts in 10 minutes, and you go, what am I thinking? All these teams are not going to pass on Quinnen Williams. He's just too good.
Right.
So it ends up coming full circle. So, man, I can't see him falling too far.
As we talk about these Clemson defensive linemen, who is the best out of all the film work you've done and studied? Who is the best defensive lineman of the guys that are coming out?
Well, for me, you know, I think there's a really, really good group of guys. But I have Wilkins just because it's hard to find interior pass rush. He can give you some of that. So he's got a long track record, very productive, and he's got tremendous inside-outside range in the run game too. So, yeah, he'd be the top one for me. And then Farrell, I think, is a little undervalued, underappreciated even in this draft class. He just, you know what you're getting. He might not be a 14-sack guy. Right. But I think he's going to get you 8 to 10 sacks every year, be really good against the run, and you won't find any higher quality of character than what he brings. And then after that, I go Big Dexter. And I wouldn't be surprised with him if he ends up going higher than people think. You know, he got hurt. He pulled up on the 40 and, you know, wasn't fully healthy through the spring. But even when he pulled up, he ran 5.05, which means he's easily sub-5 at 330-plus. I think he's got a chance. I wouldn't be shocked if he went in the top 15. And to be honest with you, I wouldn't be shocked if he ended up in Atlanta.
See, I like Christian Wilkins just as like the size, or, you know, bigger size component next to what we've got with Grady Jarrett. But, you know, anybody who watched Clemson over the years, he's a leader on that team, all the intangibles. Daniel Jeremiah is with us here, guys, breaking down the draft. The defensive tackles, because we're going to look at everything from defensive back, safety, O-line, defensive tackle. Can you still get that big-time quality defensive tackle, though, in the second round?
There's some good guys there. I mean, to me, a couple you keep an eye on with, we'll see what happens with Tillery from Notre Dame, who's really talented and just had to, you know, kind of fight through a shoulder injury. And then Tristan Hill from Central Florida, I think he's going to go in the second round. He is really explosive. So those two guys would be two I would keep an eye on with, you know, Draymond Jones and Zach Allen, you know, Colin Saunders from Western Illinois. You can find one in the second round. It's pretty deep.
We also need an offensive lineman. It's Daniel Jeremiah joining us here on Dukes and Bell, NFL Network analyst. Who is that guy? If an offensive lineman, one of these top three or four guys, falls to 14, which I think is very doable in everything that I've been looking at, what do you think about these old linemen, especially at the tackle position? And I've heard a lot about Dillard, the guy, the kid out of Washington State. A lot of people are on him.
He is. I've had him from start to finish, from pole to pole, as the top offensive lineman in this draft. He's just tremendously athletic. He's great in pass protection, and I think he's got a chance to really be good in the run game. They just didn't ask him to do it much there at Washington State. But somebody that you want to run some zone stuff in that Atlanta offense, he can really get lateral quick. He's got a chance to be really, really good. I don't think when it's all said and done, he'll be there. I wouldn't sleep on Green Bay potentially taking him at 12 and kicking Bulaga inside guard. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens with these linemen. I think there's a good group of those top guys, and I think it's a drop-off. Usually when that's the case, these guys tend to go really high.
It's Daniel Jeremiah, guys, breaking down the draft. We'll be live at Mercedes-Benz for the coverage right here on your home of the Falcons, 92.9 The Game. Do you believe all the hype about all the trades, Daniel, because you got four teams that don't have a first-round pick, a lot of teams with multiples? I mean, do you think we're going to see a lot of action?
I think we are going to see some action, and I think, you know, you look at the teams, and more so in the 20s than the top of the draft. I don't think, you know, the cost to move up in the top is so high. Unless you're going up to get a quarterback, teams don't want to pay that. But when you look at teams, you know, like the Baltimore Ravens picking in the 20s, they don't have a second-round pick from the Lamar Jackson trade. You could see them trade out. Seattle is in a position where they could try and get out of there. New England's always a candidate to trade out. So there's going to be, I believe, some movement, especially once we get to the 20s.
You always take the best player?
I take the best player unless it's a quarterback. I will take a good quarterback over a great player at another position if you don't have one. That to me is the exception that you make. So the joke is, yeah, we always take the best player and we always rank our board by need. So when we make our pick, we say, oh, we took the best player. Yeah, well, you rank them based off of the need.
That's
so
right.
Semantics.
Right. Here in Atlanta, Daniel, we have what's self-described by the coach and the GM as co-team builders. Our boy, Mike Mayock, now working with Gruden. Who's got the final say on that deal?
Well, you know, I think you usually on those deals, you follow the money. I haven't seen Mike's number. I love Mike. He's paid for my dinner every time we've ever gone out. But if he's approaching any of that Gruden money, then he can buy the restaurant, not just the meal.
Yeah, I mean, everybody's waiting to see because they're sitting there at four, and if they like a quarterback, that could maybe overturn the apple cart. They've kind of been a little cryptic about what they've got right now with Carr at quarterback.
Yeah, I'm put my network hat on. I'm hoping that they surprise us and take Dwayne Haskins. You know, that would make it fun. It would shake it up. Now you start seeing guys available that teams didn't think they had any shot at, and then that's when the draft really gets fun. So hopefully Mike is considerate of his old workplace and trying to look out for us and give us something to talk about.
Why is Drew Lock moving up? Why do you think more teams are sold on him now than they were?
I don't know that's the case. You know, I think actually there's a chance that he ends up being one of the ones that could potentially slide if he's not going to be in play with the Washington Redskins at 15. Then I think, you know, once you get past the Redskins at 15, now I think you start getting into the 20s and you start talking about, you know, would the Chargers take one, would the Packers take one at 30, would the Patriots take one? I think one of these guys is going to end up dropping it. You know, I just don't have a feel for whether that's going to be Drew Lock or Daniel Jones, but I'll be surprised if all four of those guys end up going real high.
It's a Daniel Jeremiah. Hey, we've got about 30 seconds left, Dan, before we cut you loose. Our general manager's done a nice job of getting skill position guys, middle, late rounds. Do you think Benny Snell will be there in the fourth round, third round?
Oh, all day long. Yeah, he didn't run well. So teams, you know, I talked to some teams, and they're like, okay, you've got somebody that's not going to play on third down. It doesn't have a ton of juice to be able to get outside, so he's going to be a purely inside runner. And that dings your value. So, I think he'll be there in the fourth round all day long.
Daniel, it's always good to catch up with you, man. We appreciate the info. Looking forward to Thursday and the draft. Daniel Jeremiah, guys, NFL Network analyst. You can follow him on Twitter at Move the Sticks. And, of course, NFL Network providing live coverage of the 2019 NFL Draft in Nashville beginning Thursday at 8 o'clock. Hey, man, appreciate you. Thanks so much.
You guys are the best. Take care.
Our man, DJ, man. Good stuff. Hey, how about that? I mean, so really just a matter of those, Carl, who say it all the time, those teams that fall in love with that dude, whether it's a quarterback or a defensive tackle, this could be one of the more compelling drafts in recent years.
I think it will be, and I think you're going to see a lot of movement, to be honest with you. Thursday, man, it's all going down, and we will have live coverage for you from Mercedes-Benz. Coming up next, we hit some headlines on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Strap in, youngins.
Hitting the headlines with Dukes and Bell.
All right, man. Braves get a win. A couple of wins, actually, against Cleveland. A very good club over the weekend. They get rained out Friday, so they had the traditional doubleheader. We talked a little bit about it, but it was all about Bringer of Rain.
Donaldson to left and hit an absolute ton. Oh, my goodness.
Courtesy of ESPN, Mike, that guy who made the call is the guy up in New York. He can't pronounce his name.
Vaskursian?
Yeah, that's the guy. Matt Vaskursian with the call on ESPN.
Part of the best baseball play-by-play team out there, Carl. Anyway, yeah, the Braves, and we talked about the doubleheader. It was ugly because we were joking around about, man, Tukey better be able to get dialed in, and the pitching staff, unfortunately, did put a little strain on the bullpen, but the bullpen answered the call, and then the bats have just awoken, and the number's crazy. A 19-5 run the final 14 innings up there in Cleveland.
Here's another thing Donaldson talked about after last night's game.
Our offense did a really nice job putting some bats together. Max did a great job. Two quick outs early on in the first inning, kind of scuffled a little bit. Was able to get out of there with no damage. Then kind of come back, settle in. Really did a great job throwing strikes and then finishing guys off once he got to two strikes.
Yeah, man. Freed has been money. And I mentioned this. The kid's ERA is now a ridiculous 1.38. He's 3-0. Mike said it. He could easily be 4-0.
Yeah, man. They had that game where he turned over a big lead and the bullpen imploded on him. So, yeah, he should be 4-0. The guy's just dialed in, smooth. Nothing seems to rattle him. When guys get on base, he pitches out of it. I mean, even when he gave up some runs against Cleveland, it didn't screw him up. So, yeah, that's great to see. And we'll hopefully see more and more of that. And then, again, once everyone else gets ready, Faulty Wright is good to go. Then we should be okay. The bullpen still a concern. I mean, did you see enough in these two games to say, or these last three games? No, me neither. So that's still something that's going to have to improve and show more of that consistency.
You're going to have ups and downs in the bullpen. The problem is, again, every time we go to the bullpen, you're a little antsy, and you shouldn't feel that way. They did a terrific job after Tookie blew up, but the question marks are still there. And they're there enough, Mike, that the front office should be trying to address them.
You know, one thing that's really interesting, guys, if you had gone and made a few more moves, just, you know, as we said, you know, you had the money. It's just a matter of, you know, what's your, you know, game plan as far as self-imposed salary cap. Take a look at the National League East. I saw this number over the weekend. Runs scored. Phillies have only scored two more runs than the Mets and the Braves. Five more we've scored than the Nationals. We've only gave away one run less than Philly. So everybody basically is even, Steven. 12-9, we're at 11-10. So, I mean, it might go down to the wire. I'm just curious to see, again, barring injuries, just to who's going to have to step up at the trade deadline, because someone might just have to do that because everybody's jumbled right now.
No doubt about it. It is Dukes and Bell. I say Atlanta.
United.
Yeah. Turn the music down real quick, Sam. Let me ask this question. Atlanta United fans, what are we right now? How would you describe our team?
Frustrating. I mean, close but no cigar, and close don't count. I mean, I don't want to hear about these chances. Chances are great. The good teams with the stars, we got the reigning MVP, you put the ball in the net. So we're creating more chances. If you believe that this trend will continue and the worm will turn, but I think there's also at some point we're going to get to the point where we're still at the bottom of the standings in the Eastern Conference. We've got a long way to go just to make the playoffs. We're digging a hole for ourselves.
1-3-2, winless in our first three MLS games at home. 0-1-2. You can turn the music back up. I just wanted
You and I, sidebar, we were talking about this off the air. Easter Sunday, a lot of people travel, folks spend time with their family. I don't know if that's part of it. The weather was terrible for G-Day. We'll talk about that in a second. But I don't know, the crowd, there was a lack of oomph on Saturday. And again, you take the wind out of your sails when you give up a goal in the first 8 minutes. You know, that's always going to be something which kind of leaves people going, oh, crap, here we go again.
Yeah, I don't disagree. And again, I can't speculate on how much Easter played a role into this. I will tell you this, though, the people that were there, some of them walked out. Some of them in protest of what their frustrations are with our club are walking out. I gotta tell you guys something. I didn't see that last year. I didn't see that last season. I didn't see that in December when we were playing for the MLS Cup.
Mm-hmm.
So for all the excuses and things that we want to throw out there, there are things going on with our club and the reaction by fans that were not taking place last season.
Well, when you're down 2-0, the feeling the way the team was, I mean, yes, close, a great, I mean, Crossbar, Barco, everybody, I mean, chances that were there, they didn't finish. I was, yes, hands up in the air. I left after the second goal. I was heading out. And then I'm in the escalator going down when I got to stop and I got to watch Joseph take the penalty kick. Sounded like this.
Joseph up to the ball, strikes it, and scores. And Atlanta United gets one back here right at the death.
Yeah, 97th minute, that penalty kick came, Mike.
And unfortunately, is you know, yes, that's a little too late. The team is creating chances. The injuries are still a factor. So if you want to play devil's advocate, and again, I hate doing that, but let me just give you some – I'll give you some sunshine here. When Bello's healthy, when Escobar is healthy, when Brechet's not on the field, you know, when Pity Martinez is able to contribute a full 90 minutes and really contribute, I mean, then okay. But how far down are we going to be by the time all these things start to happen?
Well, that's my question. And I'm not going to do that. I'm going to be the other side of this and tell you we're not the same team. We're not as good as we were. It's obvious. I'm not going to sit here and make excuses for it. Yes, we are owning possessions and we are having plenty of opportunities, but we're still not scoring, guys. The name of the game is scoring. In the NBA, it's putting the ball in the hoop. In the NFL, it's scoring touchdowns. Yeah. We're not scoring goals.
Now, I like the analogy. You know, again, we try to do it for the casual fan because there's always folks that are just getting on board with United. I like the red zone analogy. We're not scoring in the red zone. We're in there. We're controlling, what was it, over 72% of
possession.
You gotta convert, man. They know that.
Here is Michael Parker is talking about just exactly what we're talking about.
It's the toughest thing to do in soccer. And, you know, it's more difficult when the goalie's playing well. You know, we don't have the confidence right now, I don't think, either. You know, it's... You know, goals tend to come in bunches sometimes, and you know, right now, you know, we scored a couple goals in New England, but could have had more. And you know, tonight, you know, we get one at the very end off a penalty, but the run of play, we had some chances and just didn't get it.
All right, guys. So we turn the page. It's all you can do. Atlanta United taking on the Colorado Rapids. That's going to happen Saturday, 5:30 pregame, 6 o'clock kick.
And we'll talk to Jason Longshore guys at 3:20. Coming up, again, he was on the call with Mike Conte, our soccer expert, and he will again talk us off. He's been talking us off the ledge a lot this year.
Yeah, I just think the fan reaction to me spoke volumes about the frustration level and the product. I mean, is it insulting to say that it's kind of still boring? Is that insulting?
Well, I mean, this is you had more chances. I will say this. I mean, you're getting more oohs and ahs, but the holding style, it's just – I don't know. Look, my two favorite teams are Chelsea and United. Both had personnel moves in the offseason. Both have new coaches, and both teams look nothing like they did the year before.
Yeah. Change happens. Who adapts best? And obviously, we haven't done a great job of that, at least at this point in the season. Hey, it was GJ, and we were up in Athens on Saturday before we made our way down here back to Atlanta United. But the game itself, guys, and we'll talk more about this at 4 o'clock in the Dog Report. We'll tell you what we thought and some things that stood out. But Kirby talked about the biggest growth area for Jake Fromm.
I think leadership was the biggest thing he took a step forward in, and assessing his personality on the receivers, on the O-line, not being timid to step up and say things to guys when things need to be said. And not that he's ever been afraid to do it, but I think he's asserted himself more.
Hmm. Now, he throws the ball behind, gets picked, and he goes as a pick six. I mean, it's tough because Kirby traditionally likes to throw the ball. He puts the ball in the air a little bit more in the G-Day game and letting the guys get some experience. I thought Dwan Mathis was fun to watch, by the way. You know, and Landers, the receiver, you can see the hype around him. I think he'll get more consistent. He dropped some passes he should have caught, and he also made some tough catches, also threw for a touchdown.
We talked about a couple of concern areas. The DBs actually look good as a group. Some knockdown passes. We talked about the pick. But also wide receiver, and Kirby Smart had talked about the depth there as well.
We just don't have numbers. It's the thinnest position. I mean, their D-line tight end, it's probably more concerning than tight end, only because those guys play on special teams, and we lost a tremendous amount of special team snaps out of our wide receiver room.
So, again, some guys say, is Holloman a clear number two? You know, Demetrius Robertson, all that hype. Now it's time to live up to it. But Landers is a guy that, a necessity to Kirby's point, is going to get a lot of touches this year, sounds like.
No doubt, man. It is Dukes and Bell. It's our headline segment. NFL Blitz is coming up in less than 10 minutes as we'll continue to break down the draft. Real quick, NBA playoffs continue. This guy, Damon Lillard, is pretty good. Pretty good, Mike. Last night, he had 15 of his 24 in the third quarter. And they now lead 3-1 over OKC. I think that series is done. Celtics win over the Pacers. They sweep them out of the playoffs. Warriors are up 3-1 in that Clippers series. We talked about all the stuff at the beginning. Kevin Durant is playing like Kevin Durant. And then Toronto leads 3-1 against the Magic. Kawhi had 34. That series looks like it's going to be a wrap. Tonight you got Bucks and Pistons. Bucks have they should win this series. They're up 3-0, and then the Rockets are 3-0 on the Jazz.
One of the interesting storylines, Klay Thompson, you know, he baptized himself in the waters of Lake Minnetonka. No, actually, he jumped in the Pacific, which is very cold outside San Francisco Bay, but kind of cleared his head. And according to everybody in Golden State in that locker room, the blown lead was maybe the best thing to kind of shake them out of whatever they were in, because they're looking like they're going to take care of business now.
What could happen if the Cards do draft a quarterback number one? We'll talk about it next.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world.
Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.